Hello and welcome to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Dr. Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. And produced in the studios of WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. I'm Jeff White. This is edition NWS 809 for release on Sunday, August 25th, 2024. On the program today, Island Hopping in the Pacific, Part 1, Tarawa and Canton. And more of our conversation with Ray Robinson and myself at the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters annual meeting for 2024 in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Well, during the era of the Pacific War, many radio broadcasting stations were established by America to provide entertainment and information to service personnel on duty in nearby areas. Some of these medium wave stations were land-based fixtures, while others were more mobile and could be moved from one location to another, as circumstances would require. There were unique events involving several of the AFRS stations located on these small tropical islands in the territories of what are now Kiribati and Tuvalu. Today, Ray Robinson covers the first two of these, Tarawa and Canton.
Thanks, Jeff. The small independent nation of Kiribati is located in the South Pacific, halfway between Hawaii and Australia. This small country of less than 300 square miles consists of 33 main islands in several island groups that were known under other names in earlier times. These were the Gilbert and Ellis Islands, which are 16 islands including Tarawa, the Phoenix Islands, 8 islands including Canton, the Line Islands, 8 islands including Christmas Island, and Ocean Island. The total population of Kiribati is a little more than 100,000, and the capital city is Tarawa, with 65,000 people. The city of Tarawa itself is a coral atoll made up of several small coral islands. The commercial centre is on Betio, the government offices are on Bairiki, and the international airport is on Bonriki, all part of the capital city, Tarawa. The original settlers in Kiribati were the Austronesians, and in the 1400s, the Samoans invaded the islands, followed by the Spanish, and then the British, and then the Japanese. The islands were liberated by Allied forces during the Pacific War, and they gained independence from the UK on July 12, 1979. The Australian dollar is the national currency, and English is the official language, although Gilbertese, or Kiribati, is spoken locally. These islands are scattered over a 3,000-mile-wide belt across the central and western Pacific, straddling the equator. Before independence, the Gilbert Islands and the Ellis Islands to the south of them lay west of the international dateline, while the Phoenix Islands and the Line Islands lay to the east of it and were essentially a day behind. But in the 1990s, the government of Kiribati decided to bend the dateline around all of the Phoenix and Line Islands south of Hawaii to bring them into the same calendar date as the islands to the west. In earlier years, Tarawa in the Gilberts was simply an island village, built on a small island in a coral atoll. Other inhabited islands in the Tarawa Atoll are Betio, Nanika'ai and Bairiki, all of which have been subsequently featured in the broadcasting activities of the government of Kiribati. After the attack on Pearl Harbor during World War II, Tarawa and other islands of the Gilbert group were occupied by Japan from 1941 to 1943. The expulsion of the Japanese military in late 1943 involved one of the bloodiest battles in U.S. Marine Corps history. Marines landed in November 1943 and the Battle of Tarawa ensued. Once under US control, two different AFRS, or American Forces Radio Service stations, were established on different islands with the same call sign. This is what happened on Tarawa. According to official AFRS records, it was on July 15, 1944, that station WXLF began broadcasting on 1340 kHz on Tarawa Island in the Tarawa Atoll. The rated power output of this new station at this time is not given in any of the known references. Around this era, most of the exotic little radio stations in the Pacific were heard in New Zealand and Australia. However, there's no known record of any logging of this station in either Australia or New Zealand, and this would suggest that the station was indeed running at quite a low power level. We could suggest that the rated power output could be as low as 5 watts, similar to the stations in the same area on Johnston Island, Midway and Canton Island. A doctoral thesis prepared by Theodore Delay in 1951 states that this radio station on Tarro was soon afterwards transformed into what was called a sound system station, with loudspeakers installed in various buildings throughout the service encampment. However, station WXLF continued to be listed also as a radio broadcasting station on 1340 kHz, as printed in Pacific Island radio lists published in the United States, New Zealand and Australia. Just before the declaration of peace in the Pacific in August 1945, this station was indeed heard on 1340 kHz by an unidentified monitor somewhere in the South Pacific. And then a few years later, the noted Ern Suffolk, who wrote the scripts for the first DX programme on Radio Australia, stated that he heard a station on 1550 kHz announcing as the Voice of Tarawa. The first listing of this station in the World Radio Handbook isn't until 1955. However, then it's shown as being on 844 kHz, 355 metres, with a power of 50 watts, using a call sign VTW. There are no known QSLs from station WXLF on Tarawa Island in the Gilberts. Now, AFRS Tarawa was indeed listed with one and only one call sign, WXLF. However, another station on another island in the same country, Canton, was on the air at the same time under the same call sign, WXLF, though on a different frequency. So, why were two stations on two different islands allocated the same call sign? Was this simply a mistake due to communication difficulties in isolated and underpopulated islands? So, what do we know about Canton Island? Well, Canton Island is in another part of the Kiribati nation, the most northerly island in the group known as the Phoenix Islands. It's a low, flat, sandy island with little vegetation and almost no trees, and it's surrounded by a coral reef with a large enclosed lagoon. Canton was discovered by American and English whalers in the 1800s, and it was named Canton by the American commander Meade in honour of a British whaling ship that ran aground on the reef in 1854. Both the United States and England laid claim to Canton Island, and several notices identifying these claims were posted on the island beginning in 1936. Soon afterwards, personnel from both nations were placed on the island to substantiate these claims of possession. It was in 1937 that the British established the first radio station, a communication facility on Canton Island. A few months later, the Americans also brought radio equipment onto the island and established their own shortwave communication station with a call sign NSN. Then in 1939, both countries signed a 50-year agreement for joint administration. Also in 1939, the United States airline Pan Am established a modern refueling facility on Canton Island for the benefit of the seaplanes in their Trans-Pacific Clipper service. Pan Am also established their own radio communication station on Canton in 1939, and it was noted on the air with two different call signs, KABS and KVZC, one for each frequency used. Then AFRS and Pan Am jointly established entertainment radio stations on Canton for the benefit of personnel stationed on this small and lonely island. The first station was launched in 1944 with a call sign WXLF, the same as was used by the station on Tarawa Island. Use of the WXLF call sign on Canton ended 18 months later, to be replaced by a new post-war Canton broadcasting station. The early editions of the World Radio Handbook are very incomplete, mainly focusing on shortwave broadcasting, but we note that by the 1955 edition, they were listing this station as being jointly operated by US Civil Aeronautics and Pan American Airways for local entertainment. The listing shows the station using the call sign KIBE on 1248 kHz, 241 metres, with 50 watts. That station was logged by various listeners, first as KIBE and later as KIBS, most notably by Arthur Cushin in Invercargill, New Zealand in 1949. In addition, in 1971, an AFRS station on Eniwetok Island, WXLE, was transferred to Canton, where it went back on the air using the same call sign, and we'll have more about that station next week. It was rebuilt on Canton at a 250-watt facility, which was heard regularly in New Zealand. It finally left the air in 1979. Over the years, there have been a few QSLs issued to verify the reception of the entertainment radio stations on Canton Island. It's noted that several QSLs were issued to listeners located in California, Hawaii, and New Zealand on behalf of the AFRS station WXLE during the era when it was operating on medium wave with 250 watts. In addition, Arthur Cushin also received a letter verifying his reception of the Pan American Airways station in 1949. Back to you, Jeff.
Thanks, Ray. Next week, Ray will be concluding this series with a look at early AFRS stations on two other islands in the Pacific, in the Wetok and Makin. On July 22nd and 23rd, shortwave broadcasters from around the United States and some shortwave listeners from Canada got together at the 2024 annual meeting of the U.S. National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters, which was hosted by Galcom International, a company that builds fixed-tuned, solar-powered radio receivers for Christian radio stations in various parts of the world. Ray and I were there in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and after most of the meeting was over, we recorded a conversation about the meeting in the very nice Galcom radio studio. Today, we present part three of that conversation. Then we also had another local person, Sean Welsh, talking about, since Radio Canada International has been off the air, there's, and apart from CFRX, there's really no Canadian content much on shortwave anymore. So he created a program called Canadian Content Radio, right?
Yeah, which you carry on WRMI, yeah? And I think it started as a monthly, but has quickly developed into a weekly broadcast. And he just enjoys showcasing Canadian music and Canadian artists, mostly independents, not signed to any particular label. And he puts a little bit of chat in with it, talks about the latest goings on in Canada, maybe a little bit of sport, tries to stay away from politics because he said his listeners don't really want to hear politics, and that's quite understandable. So he has fun with it. And you may remember we did a feature here in Wavescan a few months back on CKLW in Windsor, Ontario.
Yeah.
The Big 800 that was a powerhouse top 40 station back in the 60s and 70s and was the major top 40 station for the city of Detroit. That struggled a little when the CanCon rules were introduced in 72 or 73, where stations had to have at least 30% Canadian content. But they survived by showcasing Canadian talent that we then became familiar with, artists like Anne Murray and Gordon Lightfoot and The Guess Who and so forth, came to attention through stations like CKLW. What really killed that station off eventually, or forced it to change format, was its inability to get an FM permit from the CRTC. They wouldn't allow it to simulcast on FM as well as AM, and that was really the death knell. And it became a news talk station. But CFRB is now news talk as well, and that's what's carried on the shortwave, 6070, and it does very well. So Sean, with his Canadian Content Radio, is trying to showcase the Canadian artists and doing it through WRMI now, and gets a lot of response from that. So he's very happy with what he's doing.
Yeah. I think he was also on Channel 292 in Germany for a while, wasn't he?
Yes, I think he mentioned that. Yeah.
Another one of the presentations was by Mike Sabin of Transworld Radio, who wasn't with us either, but he was with us via Zoom.
He was with us in spirit, but he was with us by Zoom, that's correct.
and Mike talked about the Asian, he's in charge of the Asian technical operations, right? Of
yes, TWR. not just Guam, but he was talking about Sri Lanka and several other locations where TWR has transmitters targeting the Asian audience, and he's, I guess, responsible for all of the technical side of those transmitters. In Sri Lanka, the transmitter is actually owned by SLBC, but he said that TWR engineers are there on site. He said there were two of them that helped maintain that equipment and do what was necessary with the transmitters by arrangement with SLBC. So, yeah, he has quite broad responsibilities, I think, these days.
He was at KTWR in Guam for many years, I think, worked there. And gave us sort of an overview of that situation there and the problems they've had with typhoons, right?
Oh, he showed us some very dramatic photographs of hurricane damage to the antennas where the masts were still fine, but the antennas suspended from them were just a total mess, completely wrecked. I guess they just have to prepare for that pretty much on an annual basis, knowing that typhoons are going to be coming through from now, from time to time. But yeah, some hair-raising stories for sure.
Speaking of the Pacific, Gerhard Straub, who used to be with the U.S. Agency for Global Media, recently retired, confirmed to us at this meeting that their Saipan and Tinian stations are going to be dismantled, gone.
Oh, I didn't hear that. I must have missed that.
Just recently. We heard rumors of it, but we didn't really want to announce it until he confirmed it officially, I guess. And so I think they're used by Radio Free Asia a lot, right?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. So two VOA or USAGM relay stations going off the air soon.
I think there have been rumors about Sao Tome as well. I'm not sure the future of that site is.
Right, right. Now, with KTWR, they are doing DRM transmissions to basically, I think, to Japan and China and India, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's quite impressive. He showed us the broadcast schedule for their various transmitters, and they're doing a lot of programming in DRM these days. He said, though, that in India, although there's been a lot of talk about the DRM radios in cars in India, it turns out that most of them can only receive DRM on medium wave. They don't receive DRM on short wave. They don't have short wave reception, which is a problem. They're trying to upgrade a transmitter in Sri Lanka to, what was it, 300, 400 kilowatts? It was pretty powerful to give coverage of South Asia, of southern India and Sri Lanka. And that would operate DRM as well. But he said most of the DRM response they get comes from China and from Japan. China is probably the biggest user of DRM in the world right now. And the most of the radios that are available are made in China, so I guess that is understandable. From Japan, he said most of their listeners were people who had dongles plugged into their laptops and so on and could get DRM reception that way. Yeah.
And people can now listen to DRM on one of these SDR radio.
The Kiwi SDR network, yes, does have DRM reception capability.
So TWR believes in DRM, whereas we had a presentation after that by Carl Forshee of Adventist World Radio, which operates the other shortwave station in Guam, KSDA. And they're not such believers in DRM, are they?
No, their broadcasting is all analog. They don't have any digital.
But they transmit, they've had some upgrades, upgrades of equipment, I think, in recent years. I forget how many transmitters and antennas he said they had, but maybe six antennas or something.
Yeah, I think they got five or six transmitters there. Mm. They're all 100 kilowatt transmitters at KSDA, mm-hmm. whereas at KTWR they have one 100 and I think two 250s or three 250s, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
So they're higher power transmitters at KTWR, but KSDA is the only station that is owned and operated by AWR. AWR broadcasts on many, many stations around the world, hundreds and hundreds. Some of them, they just buy airtime for their programming. Others are owned and operated by local Seventh-day Adventist churches, but not by AWR per se. And so, Carl was working both with AWR and with a sister organization called Voice of Prophecy that some of you may remember was started by evangelist HMS Richards back in 1929. Used to be just a single half-hour weekly radio program that was heard many, many stations across the States and Canada. But that's now grown into a larger ministry that's producing radio program content that also gets placed on stations around the world. And so the two of them kind of work hand in glove, Voice of Prophecy and AWR.
And we should mention that Wavescan is broadcast from KSDA, and some of the other AWR relays, such as Trincomalee and Madagascar, I believe.
Yes, correct. Yes.
Other presentations here at NASB. Of course, you gave an update on Voice of Hope, and we talked about the Middle East station. But so you also had some very interesting slides of Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, I thought.
Well, yeah, that's still working. The challenge there is electricity supply. And the problem right now is that about 3/4, maybe 75% of the electricity in Zambia and also in Zimbabwe to the south is generated through the Kariba Dam on the Zambezi River. And that dam is dependent on good water flow from the tributary rivers, which comes in the rainy season, which usually runs from about November to March each year. And this last winter, North American winter, their rainy season, they had very, very little rainfall. And so the lake levels are particularly low. And it means that their ability to generate electricity is severely restricted. And right now, both those countries, they have scheduled power outages, basically 12 hours a day, every day. And it rotates. It's not the same time every week. They will sometimes be off, say, from 1 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon, or maybe from 4 in the afternoon to 4 in the morning, or something like that. There's a schedule gets published each week, but you have to work around that. And so our Voice of Hope Africa station, broadcasting from Lusaka, Zambia, is currently scheduled to be on the air local time from 4 p.m. to 11 p.m. That would be 1400 to 2100 UTC. Mm-hmm. But if there's no electricity in the evenings, then we have to quickly switch, and for whatever week we're not going to have electricity in the evenings, we broadcast in the mornings, because usually you have one or the other. And then we broadcast local time from 6 a.m. to 11 a.m. But it's a challenge for all of the broadcasters. We do have a backup generator there, but right now we don't have the diesel to operate it. Diesel's incredibly expensive there too. So it's just something we have to live with. But it's one of the realities of dealing with life in Africa. They haven't had this water problems on the Zambezi this bad in the last 20 years. This is the worst it's been. And right now, the lake level, part of the lake that they can use for generation of electricity, is down to 11% capacity. And they know they're not going to get any more water in it for electricity generation purposes until at least December of this year. So they've got to make that little bit last.
And so when the station is on the air, this program is, Wavescan is also broadcast.
It certainly is. Yeah. Wavescan is at let's see, 1800 UTC on Sundays on Voice of Hope Africa,
mm-hmm.
on 4965. Now, probably you're only realistically going to hear that if you're in Central or Southern Africa, but there are online SDRs in South Africa. Trans World Radio mm-hmm. runs an online SDR that's on the south coast of South Africa, and we hear Voice of Hope Africa on that quite clearly. Mm. So if you look at the SDR network or networks, you'll find that Trans World Radio one, and it's very good for monitoring Voice of Hope Africa.
Ray Robinson and I were speaking there at the 2024 annual meeting of the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. We had WaveScan today with music from Kiribati. This is Tady Boy. Thanks for listening to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. Next week on the program, we'll go island hopping in the Pacific, part two, in a Wet'tok and Mackin. Also more from the NASB meeting in Canada and a DX report. WaveScan is heard weekly on KSDA in Guam, AWR relays in various locations, WRMI in Florida, WWCR in Tennessee, Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, and IRRS Italy. Send reception reports directly to the station you're listening to. Reports for KSDA and other AWR sites should go to qsl@awr.org. Other correspondence, not reception reports, can be sent to wavescan@yahoo.com. I'm Jeff White at WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. Till next week, good listening, everyone.